It was the best of times. It was the worst.
She was the people's princess.
She'll fight on the beaches.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wayman, these are the things that made England.
The fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body, but of a weak and evil woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England and St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Things That Made England. The idea of the show is to decide on what things make England as she is, the country that, despite it all, we feel lucky to be part of. Every episode, one of us will pitch an idea to be designated as one of the things that made England distinctive, and we will talk it over and just possibly reach some sort of consensus. No one is supposing, by the way, that all or indeed any of these things are specific only to England. That would be a tall order. Simply that they are an important aspect of why England is the way she is. After each episode, we'll post a poll on our Facebook group to allow you, the listeners, to vote and decide whether each idea is deemed worthy to be described as a thing that made England or not. So please do come and join us on the Facebook and join in the discussion. And finally, we have set up a Patreon page as a kind of way of passing round a virtual hat if anyone feels inclined to support the show. You can find this at patreon.com/TTME. And today I am joined by...
You're such a swat.
What?
I mean, you really are the most outrageous goody two-shoes. Do you clean your shoes every morning? Your brogues with black knots it and buff them. You've done all the proper introductions.
Yes.
TTME.
Patreon.
We didn't know none of that in my episode last time.
No, exactly.
You're a swat. And I believe two-shoes,
so. Last time I was being criticised for my lack of preparedness. So
yes,
I thought this time.
Overboard.
There's a right. Okay. So what's your name then?
Mate.
Yeah,
David Crowther. You know. What my name
okay.
Is.
Thank you very much. And I'm Luke Baxter. And it's lovely to be with you here, David, to discuss.
Get on with it.
Second
banter.
Like banter. Such good banter. It's so good. I know. I'm bantered out. Bantalicious. Fantastic.
Excellent. The Archbishop of Banterbury.
The Archbishop of Banterbury, indeed. You're still here. Well, actually, it's the the Bishop of Bath and Wells who we'll be encountering.
Nice link.
Yeah, I see what I did there. Yeah. Sieg. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So this is part two of our exploration of English comedy. It's my turn to present, and I will be speaking about Blackadder. Rather than Whiteadder.
There is a Whiteadder, isn't there?
The Whiteadders are his puritanical cousin, aunt and uncle, I think.
Ah, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
The one with the rude vegetables.
The one with the rude vegetables and the comedy breasts. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they don't have comedy breasts.
They sit on spikes.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Which is a brilliant one. Yeah. Actually, one of the few that I haven't rewatched, actually, because we kept on putting off our recording date. I thought, you know, I'd start watching a few again. I've watched nearly the whole thing through.
Right, it's a perfect excuse.
It's fantastic.
What excuse do you need to watch Blackadder again?
It's perfect. It's brilliant. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know how well-known Blackadder is out and about, as it were. But a little sort of potted story of it is, Blackadder is a historical comedy that traces the family Blackadder through four key periods in English and British history: the Wars of the Roses, the reigns of Elizabeth I and George IV, well, not his reign, actually, because he's Prince Regent during it, and the First World War. There are two characters who appear in all four series: Blackadder, whose status in life diminishes as the centuries go by. He starts as a royal prince and he ends up as a captain in the trenches. And
that's true. I had not noticed that nuance.
Ah, yes. Yeah,
he does go down the social scale. Although he's still reasonably posh, isn't he, by the end?
Well, not really, no, because he's a sort of professional captain.
I suppose he's just your level of poshness, really, isn't he? So you're right.
Yes. Not really posh. Not very posh. No.
Yeah.
You know,
posher than I am, obviously.
Yes. But he's not like, you know, he's not like Lieutenant George, who's definitely posh.
No.
You know, so he would have been one of the, you know, he's a professional soldier. Rather than somebody who joined up for the war.
An amateur.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because he was in the Sudan and things.
Yes.
Yes,
because they made a big fruit salad or something.
Yes, fighting the pygmies who were armed with mangoes. Yes. Yeah. It's quite a sharp mango there.
Yes, indeed. Very sharp mango.
Yeah.
That is an example of tackling taboo subjects.
It is, yes.
Which we decided was part of English humour last time.
Yes, I think we're going to do quite well here.
Yes. Colonisation.
Colonisation.
Repression.
Yes. Yeah.
Ethnic minorities.
Yeah.
That sort of thing, yeah.
And they laugh at it.
Sorry, I interrupted. Carry on.
No, that's fine. But, yes, more interruptions, very welcome. And the other character who appears in all of them is Baldric, his manservant. And his status remains unchanged throughout history, which I think probably says something.
Doesn't learn to count, does he?
He never learns to count or read, actually.
How many beans have I got?
I've got two beans. Yeah. That's just enough for a small cassoulet. was that yours, though, wasn't it? So the first series is an alternative history where Richard IV, one of the doomed princes in the Tower, actually survived to manhood. And so manly indeed that he's played by Brian Blessed. Gordon's alive! Yeah, Brian Blessed.
He really is. National Institution. Is he dead yet?
No.
Still alive? No.
Yeah, Brian's alive!
Can't be! He's alive!
Yeah. Oh, he's
dead for years!
No, he's amazing. He's like, you know, he climbed Everest quite recently. He's nuts.
No.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. He's an amazing chap.
Popeye went to Mount Olives.
Oh.
No, that's wrong. Moses went to Mount Olive. But Popeye hit him. It's not a bad gag.
It's not a bad gag. But
it
would have been improved if he hadn't started with the punchline. Yeah. Blackadder, the Blackadder, is the younger son of the king and a bit of a snivelling wretch. His father, the king, continuously gets his name wrong. You know, it's Edmund, but his dad calls him Edgar and Edward and so on. And in the first series, the Baldric is the smart one. He's the intelligent one. And it's him, for instance, who suggests the name the Blackadder rather than...
Alternatively, he's Blackadder says, "I should be known as the Black Vegetable."
The Black Vegetable, yes.
Which actually is one of the very few funny lines, apart from the jumping Jews of Jerusalem, in the first series.
Ah.
He said, controversially.
Well, yes. Liking the first series of Blackadder is a bit like being one of those people who won't listen to any Pink Floyd made after Sid Barrett left the band.
Right. Like, you know, is that what people do?
Oh, yes.
I have a couple of mates who argue about Genesis.
Oh.
One of them says that Genesis is absolutely awful after Peter Gabriel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other one says you can't listen to anything which has got Peter Gabriel in. That's the same sort of thing.
Very much so with Pink Floyd. Yes, I would say, because, I mean, Piper at the Gates of Dawn, which was the, you know, their masterpiece, their early masterpiece.
Oh, you're a Genesis fan.
No, it's the Pink Floyd.
Sorry, I'm going to have to go.
It's Pink Floyd. I'm not a Genesis fan. 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 Piper at the Gates of Dawn is a Pink Floyd album.
Oh, right.
I'm continuing. I'm continuing my Pink Floyd analogy here.
Right. And I thought you switched to Genesis.
No, I don't, can't stand Genesis. No.
Yeah. If it wasn't Saxon, I didn't listen to it. If it didn't have satin trousers, it wasn't for me.
You didn't like Pink Floyd?
Nah.
Oh my god.
Yawn.
Oh dear. Well, don't listen to the Piper at the Gates of Dawn, because that is truly unlistenable.
Right. Yeah, well, it sounds incredibly pretentiously prog.
Yes, it's very prog.
I mean, you know, like The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Yeah.
Well, pass me the mint sauce. I mean, obviously that's not amusing, but, you know, come on. Anyway, aren't we supposed to be talking about Blackadder?
Yes, but that's my point, is, you know, but anyway. Anyway, it's after Roger Waters left that you should stop listening to Pink Floyd. But you've got no taste, so...
I don't even know who Roger is.
Yes. He's you're a lost Buddy. You're a lost cause. I'm shocked. Sorry, I might just have to hang up here. I can't take any more. You don't like Pink Floyd. Jeez.
Pink who?
Yeah. Oh. Dear, oh dear. Anyway, yes, so the point being, to reinforce what you're saying...
Sorry, there was a point?
There was a point somewhere in there, yes, that the, you know, is that really the first series is just not as funny as the remaining three series. But, you know, it's good. I think it's, you know, it's a good series, but they were quite lucky to get any more after that, I think, because, you know, there's sort of basic gags per minute. Is quite sort of low compared to the others. And it was actually weirdly, it was a lot more expensive because it included lots of sort of exterior filming and they had lots of extras and everything. Whereas the other series are filmed on a set in front of an audience and which a lot of people seem to think makes comedians funnier.
Right. It kind of does. If somebody else laughs, you're more likely to laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, canned laughter is a hideous concept, but actually it works.
Yes, but it wasn't. It wasn't canned. They would.
Oh right, it was just
real. Well, there's real audience.
Yeah, and they just laughed.
And they just laughed. Yes, because it was funny. Yeah, I see your point. Yes.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Well, of course, the key thing, as you'll know, Luke, is in the writing team.
Yes.
Because Ben Elton.
Ben Elton joined. Yeah, exactly.
Richard Curtis.
Yeah.
In the second one, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And that, it just seems to work, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The two of them.
And I think also that, you know, then they got Stephen Fry in. He helped a lot with the writing as well. And I think, yes, it really tightens up and it is brilliant. Because in the second series is fantastic. But the whole
is brilliant.
Yeah. The aesthetic of that is, you know, couldn't be more different, really. Where you've got, you know, most of the action just takes place on that very compressed stage.
Yeah.
You know, with Queen Elizabeth, Nursey, and Melchi, and sort of confronting Blackadder. And in this series, so Blackadder has sort of slipped down a rung on the aristocratic ladder. And he's one of the sort of many noble supplicants at the court, desperately trying to curry favor with the monarch. Yeah. So he's kind of, get your opinion on this. He's sort of Dudders, isn't he? Your Dudley. Isn't he?
Is he? Is that what he is? I suppose he is.
Yeah.
Well, no, he's not, because she's not in love with Dudders. She's in love with Dudders. And she's
yeah.
not really in love with
Dudders. Well, there's a whole sort of... Yes, there's a sort of...
Will the sex thing going
yeah, on. Yeah, yeah. You know, when he goes off to sea, it's so that he can impress her and she's going to fall in love with him and do that sort of thing. But also there's the sort of will she, won't she chop off his head, which...
Yes, will chop off his head. And she never really threatens to cut off Dudders' head.
No, but didn't she banish him for... Was it him she banished for marrying someone?
She caught for a while, but she didn't. I mean, I think maybe you're thinking of Essex.
Right, Essex, she did chop off his head.
She did.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I am thinking more Essex.
I don't know. You see, I could be wrong, and you could be right. Although that would be unusual.
It would. Especially on
banter.
This.
You see banter?
Yes. Yeah. Tick.
Get that? Tick.
Does banter work if you have to sort of signal it?
More like a sort of an identikit Elizabethan courtier, you know, yes. Desperately, because they're all mad, you know, to be the most powerful, the most honourable.
Yeah.
You know, they go and lay waste to Ireland just to show how manly they are.
Yeah.
And he kind of feels like that, isn't he? He's got to prove himself. He's got to be at the top of the tree. He's got to compete.
Yes. And also then, so Melchi is, who's the Lord Chancellor? Who's her main, the father and son?
Oh, what? Burley.
Yeah. Yeah. And Melchi's Burley, isn't she?
Burley.
Right.
Cannot not say Burley in a fake Glaswegian accent, can you?
Possibly.
Burley.
Was he Scottish?
No.
It's not in Scotland.
He's not in Scotland at all. No. You can't say Burley without saying Burley.
Okay.
Okay.
As in Burley, as in strong.
I don't know. It's just Burley. You know, what's the word? Okay. It's the R in it, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on. Just keep going.
Yes, I better. Just keep talking.
I'll try to stop interrupting.
No, that's fine. No. You go right ahead. But and you see, I mean, I think Miranda Richardson as Queenie is absolutely marvellous. But you know, I think you know, you could say it's a bit ridiculous to sort of portray her as this complete mad, capricious psychopath. But you know,
or you could say it's extremely accurate.
Yes, there is an accuracy.
I mean,
it's
brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, it is quite right off centre. It's not, you know, she wasn't obviously quite like that. But there are so many elements where you think actually. Elizabeth was very capricious.
Yeah.
She was dangerous.
Yeah.
She could change everything around. And she did so as a conscious policy to keep her male counsellors on their toes and overcome the disadvantage of her sex in the 17th century, you know, or 16th century. I mean, she's a genius at manipulation, at managing relationships. And by just taking an extra step, she's a brilliant depiction. Miranda Richardson is my favourite character in Blackadder. And that's answering a question you're going to ask me later.
Yes, because that's an essential truth of an aspect of Elizabeth, isn't it? See what I mean? Because you did a show, didn't you, where you were discussing the best Elizabeths on screen. Didn't you do an episode?
Oh, yes, that's right. With, I remember his name, and I'd formally apologise to whoever it is whose name I've forgotten.
His name was Sean Lang, and it was episode 315B of the History of England podcast.
Which was very, very interesting. He was very interesting indeed.
Yeah, it was
and
great.
Yes, I think he was making the same point that
he mentioned
very good.
Yeah. So, but in Blackadder 3, our hero is now a sort of butler or valet to the Prince Regent and the future George IV. And, you know, so Blackadder has always been accompanied by an idiotic member of the aristocracy and who was his sort of ostensible friend, Percy. And Percy in series 1 and 2 is played by Tim McInerney or something. And he's a complete fool.
McInerney.
And, you know, and he's this sort of perfect example of how unsuitable the ruling class are to rule the country. And by the third series, so as the star of the Blackadder dynasty has waned, the likes of Percy are sort of running the show now. And you've got Hugh Laurie is essentially this idiotic Prince Regent. And he's sort of filled that role of the Percy character, the total idiot. And he's quite, it's my least favourite series, actually, I think. It's got some great stuff in it. That Hugh Laurie character I just find slightly annoying. He's slightly over the top.
I rather like him, actually, funnily enough.
I love him in the next one.
right?
Yeah.
He's very funny in the next one.
Yeah.
He is very funny in the next one. I rather like him in that, you know, he obviously doesn't know what anything, and he complains about his socks a lot, which, yeah, you know, is idiotic because he's Prince Regent and he's, yeah, got billions of socks. On the other hand, it's true.
Yeah.
Where do the socks go?
Yes, yes.
Luke? I mean, where do they go?
Where do they go?
Because they go lovely. Somewhere, yeah, and it's not me. I'm not taking him, but they go. No.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know, I like him, and yeah, he doesn't understand what a rotten borough is, and he calls, yeah, it a rubber button.
Yeah.
And he calls his butler, you know, you Mr. Thicky Butlerweed,
yeah,
which I call people regularly, actually.
Yeah. And also, yes, that episode where he, where Stephen Fry is the Duke of Wellington, and just, and he's got to pretend to be Blackadder. he just hits him.
That's a brilliant episode. I love that episode, and I had forgotten about it.
Yeah,
but that's very good. And he's completely, yeah, and utterly brutal, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, apparently, Stephen Fry that. Really was hitting him.
That's very good, that episode.
Yeah,
I also like the one with the, you know, the thick papery thing.
Which one's that?
Samuel Johnson and his
yes, diction. Ink and incapability.
Yes, because I aardvark.
Yeah, yes, yeah. I love that. That's a really, really, really funny one. And I love the sort of rip off Jane Austen titles, you know, the sort of ink and incapability.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's one that's, yes, Knob and Nobility.
I mean, that's another thing. We should do Jane Austen, you know, the thing that made England. You know, you can't move.
But that's another one for Fiona, I think.
It's got to be done. Oh, there was a lovely line somebody me. Describing Jane Austen books as people sitting around talking to each other,
yeah,
or something like that. It was, yeah, funnier than that.
Anyway, not my thing at all.
Yeah. No, I love Jane Austen.
No, yeah, I just don't like the whole of 19th century English literature, which is slightly embarrassing.
Don't you?
No.
So hang on. So you don't like Trollope?
Nope. I've never tried a Trollope.
Have you not? Let's just stick to the literature, shall we? Look?
It's going out on air, so you know, I thought I should state that.
No. Carry on.
Yeah,
we are shadowing, you know, carry on.
Yeah, Dickens, all of them. I think they make great movies.
They're all rather rude, aren't they?
Yeah. I'm trying to trollop for a Dickens.
Not now.
Sorry. Well, we got sort of innuendo, double entendre. Thomas Hardy?
You keep going, and I'll try and think of a good 19th century.
Thomas Hardy's author. Just too much fun.
Edward Lear.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And I, you know, and I do like, you know, Charlotte Bronte, and I think Jane Eyre.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Charlotte is a bit more.
She's Jane Eyre, she's Jane Eyre, isn't she?
Yes,
yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Is that Charlotte or is that Emily? I don't know.
It's one of them. Yeah.
Anyway, look, keep going.
Let's keep going.
It's fine. Nobody will notice.
Yes. Edit. Yeah.
And the only 19th century literature person we like is Edward Lear,
yeah,
who,
yeah,
wrote about jumblies.
Lewis Carroll. Yes. So the final series is set in World War One, in the trenches.
Wordsworth. Hang on, Wordsworth.
Yeah, but yeah, it's not an
author. You know, the rhyme of the ancient mariner. It was an ancient mariner. He stoppeth one on three by the long grey beard and gritting eye. Now wherefore stopst thou me?
Was Coleridge. I mean, was Coleridge.
Xanadu did Kublai Khan a stately pleasure at own degree, where Alf, the sacred river, ran through caverns, measureless to man, down to a sunless sea. Luke, for shame.
They were both.
Was he 19th century?
Coleridge, yes, but those were two Coleridge poems, not
Coleridge,
not Wordsworth.
Pardon me.
Yes.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yes, Coleridge. Yes. Sorry.
And they were 19th Sorry, century. Wordy. Yeah, but they're not authors. They're poets. They're poets. They're not authors.
Right. Okay. Yeah. They don't count. Right.
Now, Wordsworth is.
Anyway,
daffodils.
Where were you? Are you running a show about Blackadder or talking about literature?
I don't know. There's this very annoying interrupting person.
Yeah. So who's that then?
Yeah. Is that you know the one about the interrupt? Have you heard of this one about the interrupting cow? Moo!
That's a terrible joke. But is that actually a joke?
It is a very good joke, and it's my sister's joke, so I will tap.
Okay, well, if it's your sister's joke, yeah, then fair dues.
Tip my cap to Mary. Yep. thrown me completely. So I think that the fourth series is the best of all, and the final episode is considered an absolute classic. I won't spoil it too much, but, you know, it's not actually particularly funny, but it's amazing. Ooh. Yeah. And in the last episode, so Blackadder is now a sort of lowly captain, and he's not enjoying the war at all. But he's accompanied by Hugh Laurie's Lieutenant George, who is sort of unfailingly chipper about the whole experience, which he considers a great lark. And Baldric is in his essence as a Tommy, sort of stoically accepting his lot. Tim McInerney is back.
Tim McInerney.
McInerney.
Repeat after me. Tim McInerney.
McInerney. McInerney.
Yeah, right. Tim McInerney.
Tim McInerney. We have to mention him again. He's back as Captain Darling.
Who plays Captain Darling, Luke?
Was it Tim McInerney?
Yes, it was.
Tim, as I call him. Yeah. They call him Tim. And he's a staff officer who serves the sort of monstrous General Melchett, with Stephen Fry, who is back as a sort of scion of the family Melchett, who was, you know, Elizabeth's Lord Chancellor in Series 2. So that's what it's all about. And, you know, can we say that Blackadder made England? You know, is it a thing that made England?
I mean, I don't think so. I don't think it's as universal. Well, we should talk about the fourth series because clearly it's not the best. I mean, you know.
Oh, so right.
Thanks for saying that.
Okay.
But, you know,
says you. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm, what's the word? Oh, right.
Oh, yes.
The thing is,
yeah,
that the fourth series uh-huh. is the only one which indulges in crass sentimentalism. And
what, there's one brief scene,
just the most vile. No, it's a constant theme. So I was talking to a teacher who was saying, I mean, I grant you it is very funny, and every time he says darling, I
yes,
laugh.
It's brilliant. Okay? Yes,
gag that just works every time. But it is soaked in, oh, weren't the leaders terrible? They led us into all these people dying. We are obsessed, more obsessed about the First World War than the Second World War, and we're pretty obsessed about that.
No, we're not. I don't think we're more obsessed. I don't think that's true.
It's absolute pathos. It is absolute. I mean, and it's true, obviously. All these millions of men died.
It's a bit sad.
It's an utter disaster.
Yeah.
But what we tend to do, and what Blackadder does, is say, oh, it's all those rubbish generals' fault. And they thoughtlessly threw away all these lives.
Yeah.
And it's all their fault.
Yeah.
Donkeys led,
lions led by donkeys. Yeah.
Tripe.
Well.
And that just annoys me. And that last episode is just appalling.
Yeah. It's okay. It
gives into every sentimental.
It's not appalling.
It is. That,
for a start, it's the one with Wibble in it.
Okay, fair enough. So, the last scene.
Okay, so the very last scene of. Yes. You don't like. Okay. But, I mean, I think the lions led by donkeys thing, it's not exactly invented by Blackadder.
No, but it absolutely plays to it.
Yes, but there is an element of truth in it. And it's, you know, it's only
how
quite...
How would you have won the First World War, Luke Baxter?
I wouldn't have... yes?
I mean... Yep. Nobody knew how to deal with this complete...
No, I know, but wait, it's only quite recently that revisionist attitude has come. The lions led by donkeys has been the sort of accepted wisdom for many, many years. And it's also, you know, things like Oh, What a Lovely War, which is a very much a precursor, not that I've seen it, but a very much a precursor in terms of comedy and in terms of attitude. You know, a lot of those, the poets were saying exactly the same thing, people who lived it, you know, Siegfried Sassoon, Owen, they were all saying the same, you know, the general, that poem is all very much, hammering home that point. So, yes, I know that recent historians have made that point that it wasn't quite fair to say that they were all bastards. And, you know, Douglas Haig was... Is it Douglas Haig? General Haig.
Yes.
Douglas Haig, yeah. Yes. No, I just thought, because there's that American who worked for Reagan, who said Haig as well. But anyway, but, you know, it's he was fated, and, you know, he had a state funeral, and he was a bit of a hero. But that doesn't, you know, I don't think you can throw that whole thing at Blackadder, that it's no, they sure. stand alone, and yeah. It's a travesty.
True.
I mean, you know.
True. I'm overstating the case. Yeah. I agree with you.
Queen Elizabeth wasn't a psychopath.
Sorry?
Queen Elizabeth wasn't a psychopath, but she's played as a psychopath.
I do agree with you. Yeah. You're quite right. I am overstating the case.
Yeah. And it's very
the
funny.
The series as a whole is incredibly funny.
Yes. But and Stephen Fry as that character is hilarious. I think
he is very funny indeed. He is very funny. But there's a bit, an edge of it. Oh, it's a bit like the satire conversation, because you really like satire. I hate satire.
Yeah.
There's a bit of the... There's just that bit of, we think we're better than the people who lived it, and it's all about the posh buggers, that just irritates me a little bit. But it is incredibly funny,
yeah.
And it is my second favourite of the series, so granted. Yeah. Yeah. But there is the history teacher who said very... I thought very... intelligently,
yeah,
with his teacher, so it'd have to be that the first thing he has to do when he teaches the First World War is get Blackadder out of people's heads.
Yeah. Yes.
Because there is this accepted truism,
yeah,
about the First World War,
yeah,
which stops people thinking.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that that's very true. But I mean, I've, you know, for me, it's sort of in a line of things like that, like Seller and Yeatman. You know, 1066 and all that, which I, you know, they're...
I think Seller and Yeatman is laughing at something different. Seller and Yeatman is laughing at our love of a traditional history. Maybe that is the same thing.
Yes.
You know, it's laughing at the fact that we've got the standard history that everybody believes.
Mm. Yes. And that's what I think, you
and
know, it's, but it... But
it's into garbage because we all repeat it.
Yeah. But it does, you know, it okay, I think that is a bit different. Yeah, but
kind
you
of
know.
The other way around, really.
But yes.
I don't know. I mean, I accept your point, Luke. I'm overreacting. And, you know, obviously it was this enormous catastrophe.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, what you'd like to think that people, politicians, wouldn't allow us to go into war. So maybe we should not have declared war.
Yeah.
And, you know, Earl Grey's reason for going to war was one of honor, which seems a quite a conceptual thing to kill 20 yeah. million people on the back of.
We were having that conversation this evening at supper. It was,
would is that
we,
right?
Well, no, would we go to war for Taiwan?
Right. Okay.
You know, because we went to war for Belgium and we went to war for Poland.
Yes.
Or we like to think we did. Whether that's quite true is different.
Interesting. What intelligent suppers you have. You're talking about
it's
we
not always
to
like that.
It's not, my
not always
God.
Like that. I could assure
you. What kind
you,
of family are you?
I can assure you. It's generally.
We were discussing fart jokes at supper.
Good. God. Yeah, sorry. Sorry. Yes. Yeah, so that's so. But I think, you know, there's for example, like Horrible Histories. Do you know Horrible Histories? And yeah. That does the same sort of thing. I think it's a very, very good introduction to history for kids. And I think.
But I had the same feeling about Horrible Histories as I had about Blackadder Go.
Exactly.
Terry Deary is shameless in not being contextual and accurate about history.
Yeah,
he's very good. My son loves history because of Terry Deary.
There you go.
And yet, I hate Terry Deary.
Yes, but you can unlearn these things. But you can unlearn them from a basis of knowledge. You know, my son will, you know, knows loads of mad stuff.
Yes, true.
And true. If he goes on to do a degree in history, he's not going to go around thinking that you know, or the four Georges were mad, fat, and whatever they are.
Yeah. It's true, although it's probably one of the things he got right, really. No. But if he doesn't go and do a degree in history, then he's not going to unlearn them, is my point.
Yes. But yeah. Yeah. But I don't think it really matters if you think that the, you know, if you're not actually studying history.
Everything in history matters.
Hmm. We think that.
You're talking to a history podcast here. Anyway, move on. What are we doing now? Blackadder. So I've vented my spleen about Blackadder, but I do totally agree. Of course, I'm overreacting, and it is incredibly funny.
Yeah.
So Captain Darling thing is just superb.
Yes, I love that.
Morning, Darling.
Morning, Darling.
It's just...
Yes. Well,
Very good. Little speckly Jim.
Little speckly Jim. Yeah, some brilliant. I thought I'd made some notes about some excellent Blackadder ones. Darling ones. Yeah. We'll come on to that in a sec, actually. But when we were discussing Monty Python that came up was the sort of how the quotes from Monty Python have become massively part of our language, and they become a sort of common idiom. And I think that's a way that you could say that a comedy show has made England, because it sort of made the country, you know, like all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order.
Yes.
Don't tell him, Pike. Am I bothered? And, you know, and I think I have a cunning plan.
A cunning plan is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty universal.
Yeah. And, you know, he's as cunning as a fox who's been just been appointed professor of cunning at Oxford University. And I literally
put a tail on it.
Yeah. Yes. And call it a weasel. I thought it was calling him a fox, but I looked it up.
Was it? No, yeah. I think it was call it a fox.
Yeah. No, it's calling it a weasel.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
It is more cunning. Is a weasel more cunning than a fox?
They're pretty cunning weasels. Yeah. They have to be. But, you know, I spent a good chunk of my years in education literally saying little else than variations on I'm so cunning, I'm...
Yes, people still mention that.
Yes. He was a ball at Baxter.
Just give him a Blackadder joke and he'll warble on and you can play.
I know, when I was receiving my education. It didn't work quite so well, would it? Because I was... teaching in Spain
when you were handing it out.
The Spanish weren't quite as, because I think we said that before about Mr. Bean, you know, that Mr. Bean's massive in Spain, but they'd no idea who Blackadder is. It's a shame.
It's all wrong.
You know, a lot of the great comedians of our time have appeared in Blackadder. Peter Cook was actually in the first episode. But, you know, you've got people like Rick Mayall keeps appearing, even Jeremy Hardy made a brief appearance. There are a lot of people there. And of course,
produced by John Lloyd, who is a bit of a...
John Lloyd,
a bit of a Diane of British comedy.
Yeah. And written by, what's his name? Richard Curtis.
Richard Curtis and Ben Elton, yeah.
Yeah. And Richard Curtis went on to do all the... romantic comedies.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, one thing.
My favorite movie, I think.
Which?
Notting Hill.
Really? Oh dear.
I know.
We've had a
watch billions. Well, she's probably slightly behind the full Monty.
Right.
But you know, I'm sorry about that. It's right up there.
That is quite awful.
Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah. So you don't like Pink Floyd. And Notting Hill is your favourite movie?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. That's awful. Yeah. Going
to make something of that?
No. Just,
cool.
You know,
cool.
You sleep well at night, do you?
Yeah. I do.
Good.
I wouldn't be if I was listening to Pink Floyd, would I?
Well, you might. It might send you off.
Yeah, that's probably true. Actually. Yeah. Probably true.
We mentioned the Bishop of Bath and Wells, who's the sort of baby eating Bishop of Bath and Wells. There was quite a good anecdote that I read about that the real Bishop of Bath and Wells turned up to the House of Lords once with his 5-week-old granddaughter. And he was greeted by the Bishop of Southwark, remarking, "The Bishop has brought his own lunch."
Excellent.
That was really
very
good.
Very good. I think there actually wasn't some element of truth about the burning bishop of
Bamber. Oh, right, yes. Really?
I don't know. It was the burning bishop of Bamber, or maybe Bamberg. Maybe I've got that mixed up.
Right.
But that is one of the... I mean, you asked me to list my favourite episodes, I think, and that's definitely one of them.
Yes, yeah.
Alongside the botched execution.
Yes.
And that one of the greatest lines in British comedy, which I repeat constantly until my children want to kill me, which is, shall I prepare the guest room for Mr. Cockup, sir? He says, we're not at home to Mr. Cockup. And of course they cock everything up.
Yeah.
So Baldrick says, honestly and openly, shall I prepare the guest room for Mr. Cockup? Very, very funny.
Yeah.
Well, you had to be there, obviously, but, you know, it was
good. Yeah, no, it's very, very good. Yeah.
The presents from Blackadder after the voyage.
Yes.
Do you remember that? He goes around Elizabethan voyages, yeah, and he comes back with a boomerang.
Yeah.
And Melchie pours scorn on the boomerang. And he says, but when you throw it, it comes back. And the Queenie says, but when I throw a stick, I don't want it back. Which is a good point.
Yes.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And is it a stick, Blackadder, in very dangerous phraseology? Brilliant.
Yeah. That's excellent. Yeah. And the Wii as well, don't they? They bring the Wii back from... Yeah.
The Wii back. And related to that, there was Percy and his alchemy session.
Yes, I've made the purest green.
The green mush. And he says, can it be that we are looking at a genuine green?
Green. Excellent. That is very, very good. Yeah. So shall we, I noticed, Dan, from last time, your list of, definitions of English comedy. In fact, we actually have a definition of English comedy from Blackadder, which is from Aid Edmondson, who is he's the Baron von Richthofen. And he says,
yes,
I look forward to hearing I look forward to hearing more of your wit, your punning, and your breaking of the wind. So that does sort of fit with your wit and your punning and sums up English humor,
because we do like breaking wind, don't we?
We do like breaking wind, and it's endlessly funny. Yeah. And, you know, some people just don't find that remotely
Well, Breaking
amusing.
Wind is not funny, is it?
It's not, no.
And yet, somehow it kind of is.
Yeah. Whoopee cushions.
Anyway, should we go through the list?
Have
a look at it. So,
yeah,
the absurd?
The absurd? Yes, I mean, there's a lot of absurdity. Yeah.
But it's not quite the same as, you know, if I was going to rate it on a conservative absurdometer.
Yeah.
It's not Monty Python level of absurd, is it?
It's not Monty Python level of absurd. No, that's right.
It's kind of like off-center, you know, like the absurdity of war, which is not serious, or sailing around the Isle of Wight rather than, you know, the world.
The Americas,
it's not, you know, it is incongruous,
I'd have said,
rather than absurd.
Okay, yeah, like that, yeah.
I like the word absurd, incongruous.
Is very good, yeah.
Deadpan?
Dry and understated. Well, I think it can be. Yes, I think Blackadder as a character can be quite dry and understated. You know, a lot of that sort of, you know, he's the, you know, I'm as happy to see you as a whatever it is. You know, I think there's lots of that stuff is quite, you know.
In fact, he brokered that. Is that a metaphor or a simile? As something.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben Elton went mad on that, didn't he? And everybody was going around at school using the most ridiculous similes.
Yeah. And that was very much his thing. So I think that's...
Also, there was a kind of reductionist thing about it. I mean, a bit like Wellington kicking around... What's his name? I suppose that's sort of slapstick in a way. But there was the bit where Blackadder insults Flashart.
Yeah.
And says, you know, everybody hates you and all the rest of it, and they think you're really rubbish. And so Flashart just punches him.
Yes.
And knocks him out. Yeah. I know there's something very, very funny about that moment.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't really be funny.
Yeah.
But it is just completely, I don't know, negative. It just says, right, thump.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it cuts through everything. I don't know. There must be a word for that. I don't know what that is. But
violence.
Very good.
Yeah.
Violence. But I mean, it is kind of dry in a sense.
Yes.
I'm not trying to be clever. I'm just going to hit.
Yeah. 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 Yes, and also because he ends up so the Baron von Richthofen, when he meets Flashheart, he's like, you know, these two great people we've been fighting, and it's like the duel of old times, and he just shoots him. Sharp, just shoots him. innuendo double entendre, I think, was plenty of that.
Just all over the place, dripping in it.
Yeah.
Absolutely dripping in it, yeah.
Yeah. Am I pleased
sarcasm,
to see...
Sarcasm, insults, and bant. Yeah.
Am I pleased to see you, or is this, did I just put a canoe in my pocket? sarcasm, yes, lots of sarcasm, banter.
Lots and lots of it.
Yeah. Self-deprecation. Yeah. I think there is a bit of self... You know, the whole Baldric character is very self-deprecating.
I suppose he is, yes. Although I don't know. I think Baldric is an older tradition. Isn't Baldric
the fool,
almost the Aulus tradition, almost the Falstaff? He's not Falstaff, is he? Yeah. He's not bombastic. But he's the traditional working class butt of jokes.
Yes. But
he's the fool.
Yeah. But I mean,
which is common throughout comedy since, you know, I had to do bloody Molière, who was a complete arse. And there's lots of that in Molière, isn't there? You know, lots of the fool.
Yeah.
He's that kind of character, isn't he?
But he's quite self-deprecating. You know, he's always making jokes.
He's not that self-deprecating. He's just stupid.
Well, no, but he's quite, you know, he's quite happy to be eating turnips.
Quite happy to be stupid.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah. Taboo?
Don't know.
No, it does not particularly.
I mean, as I say, with the Blackadder goes forth thing, they're playing to the gallery.
Yes.
They're doing the thing that everybody wants them to do, which is, you know, riff on the fact that this is a terrible waste of human life.
We've been sitting here since Christmas 1914, during which millions of men have died, and we've advanced no further than an asthmatic ant with some heavy shopping.
Yes. And there's the one where Melchie has...
The one-to-one.
Has the... Yeah, the entire ground that they've captured in the glass box.
Yeah, yeah. It's a map. It's a one-to-one representation. What scale is this, darling? It's a one-to-one, sir. Yeah, that's very good. So the taboo thing, okay. Puns and wit, obviously. Lots.
Yes, lots and lots and lots of that.
And the British class system, absolutely.
Yes.
It's what the whole thing's about, really. Yeah. Yeah. I'm making notes here.
It's a bit of slapstick, and there is definitely slapstick.
There's a lot of slapstick, yes. Yeah.
A lot of slapstick.
You know,
the Duke of Wellington thing with him kicking the prince. It's just.
And all the sort of closing.
I don't know, the things that.
Sorry.
So the things that I'm struggling with after the second episode is the self-deprecation thing. It seems to me is a very much a part of English humour.
Mm.
But I'm not sure it is a strong element in comedy shows. Because it's a very personal thing, self-deprecation. I don't know. I don't know that it works in a comedy show.
Well, you're Frank Spencer.
He's a fool. It's not self-deprecation.
Okay.
He's not being self-deprecating. He's a fool. He's a buffoon.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I suppose you have to be your real self, don't you? I mean,
if you're self-deprecating, you don't mean it.
Yeah.
Well, you might mean it, but you're conscious of it. Baldric and some others do have
somebody, I suppose, like Michael McIntyre, who's not my favourite by a long way, but, you know, he's always laughing at himself a bit, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, indeed, the sainted Kevin Bridges, you know, laughs at, you know, the oddities of... himself and the people around him, you know.
Yeah.
So he was incredibly funny about hiring a donkey, but just, you know.
Yeah.
I think that is very much English humour, but I'm not sure it comes out well in TV shows.
Yes. But I think it's that you can only be self-deprecating if you're not in character. You can't be self-deprecating about somebody you're acting because it's not yourself.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that's correct. Yes. Yeah. So it's a very personal thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't do it for somebody else.
Yeah.
Or, yes.
Yeah.
A character. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah. That's a good one. So, yes. So, do we think that Blackadder is a worthy
Well, it's a bloody good comedy thing. I don't think it made England.
No. No.
I'm very confident that there are none of these, with the possible exception of Monty P, that would be considered making England.
Yeah.
But I think your point about offering a shared language, it did offer cohesion.
Yeah.
And a shared language.
Yeah.
While it was on.
Yeah. No, as you say, I think it's absolutely hilarious. Great. So I think we were going to do three more of our favourite.
Yes.
So over to you, Mr.
Over to me first Albert. This time, shall we? Okay, let me have a look at my list, because unlike you last time, I prepared. So I thought I would start with the thing that I always feel was the precursor to Blackadder. I'm not sure fairly or not, but not the 9 o'clock news.
Ah, that's my next one.
How was it?
Nick. Love that. So,
I hate satire, as you know.
Yeah.
And not the 9 o'clock news was, in fact, in a sense, satire. But what it had was absolute coruscating, dancing wit all over the place, that new stuff that constantly made you laugh and made you look at things in a different way, that wasn't sanctimonious, you know, unlike 99% of satire, are just brilliant. And I think some of that, I suppose it was Rowan Atkinson that it introduced us to, and Mel Smith, and then along came, alas, Smith and Jones, which was also, you know, really funny. Yes. So yeah,
the monkey called George.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, he was absolutely wild. He was absolutely furious.
I was absolutely livid.
That's one of my favourite. Yeah.
More. So there's that. So the next one on the list was Blackadder. Can't have that. Monty P Films can't have that. The IT Crowd.
Okay.
Very, very funny indeed. Graham Lynham, the other one he did in addition to Father Ted. So that I get it over and done with, let's say Father Ted and the IT Crowd. They're both are very funny indeed.
Irish, though.
Ah, I see. It's supposed to be English. That's a good point, actually.
Things that made that England. Yeah.
And they're very Irish, aren't they? Well,
no, the Father IT Ted's Crowd,
very Irish. Yeah, Father Ted's. IT Crowd, yeah, I don't know. It kind of feels international. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Not English. So, Yes Minister?
No, of course. Yes. In fact, that should
Although
have its own.
I must admit, I watched it again, and it paled a bit. It hadn't quite gone out of date.
Right.
But I didn't find it as funny as I did. I'm not quite sure why, because it was fantastic. And such an incredibly clever.
Yeah. But my dad worked in the civil service, and he basically said it was a documentary. Exactly how it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can see that it's just, you know, incredibly clever.
Yeah.
My last one for this week then would be Spaced.
Okay, never seen. Yeah.
I've seen brilliant. Only two series.
Yeah.
But you know, Edgar Wright.
Yes.
Just fantastic.
Yeah.
And you know what's his
name?
The
two actors, Frost and Pegg.
Nick Frost and
Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg, that's right. And I loved Simon Pegg. I mean the film that Henry and I have watched more time than any other movie is Hot Fuzz.
Okay, yeah.
And the bit where they jump over the gates, over the fences, it's ridiculous. I've seen it 100 times. It's nothing clever, sophisticated, or witty about it, but I howl every time.
Bah, 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 bah.
Yeah. Well, yes, and it's a swan. Long, slender neck, red bill.
Yeah.
It's a swan.
It's a swan. Yes. And Shaun of the Dead.
I mean, just fantastic. So Spaced, I loved Spaced, and it introduced all the...
Yes, because that's another sort of gap that I've got in the 90s. So I didn't see Spaced or Brass Eye, which I think I'd have loved, or The Thick of It, which I think I'd have loved.
The Thick of It I didn't like so much. I don't know. Yeah. I think you might have liked.
Yeah. Yes, because I'm going to say one I'm pretty sure you aren't going to like, and that's The Office.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, I hate The Office. I have that on my list of the most
hated. Yeah. I think it's very funny. really made me laugh a lot. Because actually, the first time I saw it, I just got back from Spain and didn't know anything about it and did genuinely watch it and not know that it was a comedy show. Right. And I was like, my
actually,
God.
Actually, that might make it funnier. Actually,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Who is this idiot? Yeah. Well, what's he doing on TV? And then I would also like to nominate With Nail and I as a movie. I know it's not, which I adore. And that is another one that I think is, you know, massively quoted and has
become... Yes, I mean, people love With Nail and I. I didn't see it at the time.
Yeah.
Watched it a couple of years ago and thought, what's the fuss about?
Really?
So right. I think it is probably a thing of its, partly of its time.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it's just me not seeing it, because everybody, you know, people absolutely love it.
It's absolutely genius, yeah. But it probably... sitting around university studies.
I mean, that's why I was thinking maybe it's
living the dream.
Time, because yes, everybody looked like that in the 80s when they're or the 90s when they're students, don't they? Those long greatcoats.
Great. And so, what would you be in your hall of shame?
My hall of shame. Well, I had The Office, but let's go for Mr. Bean.
He's there for me. Yeah. Yeah.
Just shoot me.
Yeah.
Before I have to watch.
Yeah, totally agree. I'm going to put, I'll be a bit more controversial with mine. I'm going to put Vic Reeves and all of his output.
Right.
I've never got
what
that.
What about The Dove from Above? Is he The Dove from Above?
Yes, that Shooting Stars thing. Yeah. Yeah. Never got it.
Not like that.
No. Just never got it.
I could take a leave, Vic Reeves. Bob Mortar, on the other hand.
Yeah.
Very funny man.
Yeah.
Very funny money man.
I think they're lovely.
I do beg your pardon, but I'm standing in your garden.
Yeah.
Very funny man.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't go to the wall for Vic Reeves either.
Yeah.
I must admit.
Yeah. No, missed out on all that.
So Bean and Reeves, both gone. Both in the Hall of Shame.
Yeah.
I've got another question for you. What is the funniest book you've ever read before we sign out from this program?
The funniest book. I see. Now you say I don't prepare, but I do prepare.
You just prepare for the wrong questions.
All the right questions.
I mean,
all the wrong questions. All the right questions.
Exam technique.
Yes. All I know. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think beyond Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Some of those Ben Elton books were very good.
Right. Okay. Cool. I know the ones you mean.
Yeah.
What about, I'm going to say, because I, you know, asked the question, I did prepare this.
Yes.
Lucky Jim?
Right.
Ever read Lucky Jim? King's Amis?
Yes, I have. Yeah, a long time ago.
I kind of loved
Lucky Jim. Yeah, sort of set on a university campus. Yeah.
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 That's right.
Yeah.
I went to a very posh university, namely St. Andrews, where everybody was very posh. So posh though I am, I appeared slightly less posh than everybody else. And so the Lucky Jim thing played to my personal prejudices.
Oh, good. Very nice.
He was a grammar school boy. Okay. And he was a smoker, and I was, you know, mad smoker.
Yeah. Very bad. I've given up.
There you go.
Yeah.
Money?
What?
Martin Amis?
Oh, yes.
Very funny book.
Yeah, that is very funny.
Very funny book indeed.
Yeah.
The trouble with that is that he did it early in his career.
Yeah.
And then every other book he wrote disappointed
him. Yeah. And Dead Babies.
Dead Babies.
Yeah.
Quite good. But I don't know. There was something about, I think it was maybe there was only one book of like money that could make me laugh, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because after that, it became just a bit grim.
Yeah.
But God, money made me laugh.
This is going to,
And when she's sitting on his face and taking the credit card payment with one of those sort of little machines. Yeah. Just very funny. Just very funny.
Yes.
But a bit gross.
Yeah. Very gross. And Dead Babies, obviously, very gross. I'm holding back on my answer for this, and I'm going to keep it for our Facebook, because...
Okay.
We're now having a Facebook roundup, obviously.
Can you guess Luke's funniest book?
There you go.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay. Should we introduce the roundup?
Yeah, I was trying to do that.
Roundup? Well, we had something of a hooly in our first outing about English comedy, and I blench at having to do the feedback. I blench whiter than a forced rhubarb. And forcing rhubarb, I have always considered something of an outrage and have started the People's Front of Rhubarbia in protest. Come and join. Anyway, where was I? English comedy. Well, one feature of the post in Facebook, I have to say, is the almost monolithic, totally homogenous response to the poll and, in contrast, the very varied and, might I say, disputatious nature of the discussion. On the poll, basically everyone who was anyone agreed that, yes, there is a distinctively English sense of humour and that, yes, Monty P is a thoroughly good example of it. At this point, I would like to raise a glass to Andrea and to Alison, who had the courage to vote that, no, Monty Python is not funny. Much as I love Monty P, it does sometimes annoy me that our love for them is almost as solid as a stick of rhubarb. We are still discussing a witness protection package for Andrea and Alison as we speak. A joke I have stolen from Paco. Did I get that right? Ah. So, very little debate on the English, not British thing, which I'd like to explore sometime, somewhere else. Quite a lot of debate, it has to be said, on Spanish humour from Paco, Sarah and Luke, though my heart bled when Paco remarked that he was feeling less and less special. We're all special on the things that made England, Paco. If that's philosophically possible. Is it philosophically possible? Answers on a postcard. Anyway, we heard about, wait for it, El Rey Arturo y los Caballeros Locos de la Mesa Cuadrada. How's that? And a Spanish film called Amance que no es poco, which we are told is a Spanish Monty Python. A little part of me died, again, when Paco wrote, and I quote, to my horror, some people know Hotel Fawlty, others have watched Shaun of the Dead, but most Spanish people must think British comedy died when Mr. Bean ended. I weep. The same feedback is frequent from Uncle Sam, where I personally have been complimented on English comedy and been given both Benny Hill and Mr. Bean as examples. If they invent time travel, I will go back in time, walk straight past Sarah Connor, Genghis Khan and Stalin, and strangle Benny and Bean in their cots with a stick of rhubarb for what they have done. Maybe that's just me, but I agree with Eric when he cried in pain about a humour hierarchy meme, because memes are life for Eric, and indeed it's been rumoured that Eric is in fact a meme. How can slapstick, he said, be a higher form of humour than irony? Too right, Eric. How? How? Bunch of discussion about the similarities and dissimilarities between English and American humour. The main conclusion appeared to be that I know bugger all about American comedy, guilty as charged, and that if we do want to know more, we need to get a stand-up where beats the heart of American comedy for Ken, and Leonard shared a very good clip about a redneck routine, which rather neatly demonstrated the use of self-deprecation in a comedy routine. Though Luke shared an interesting clip of Stephen Fry on the subject of English and American comedy, his view was that American comedies like to have a hero, a winner as their protagonist, or at least a person with good qualities, whereas by and large, the English go for losers. Interesting and quite convincing, I thought. Anyway, Steeple made the point that maybe we're talking about British comedians here rather than British comedy, which makes the point that there are, of course, comedic styles which cross boundaries. Leslie and Eric gave us references to a bunch of great French comedy, 10%, the series, Au service de la France, and Les Visiteurs are all super funny, according to Leslie. The movie Molière, says Leslie, has bits which are hilarious, which cannot be right, because if Molière is funny, so is Shakespeare, and we know that's not true. Eric and Tony gave us several more, and quite rightly pointed the finger of Jacques Tati. Eric's finger was admiring, mine would be very different, but hey, vive la différence. Dear, dear, this could go on forever, so I must summarise. Much mention then of the influence and quality of Oxbridge comedy, a point that Paco made, quite right, and of radio, like The Goons, Hitchhikers, and the absolutely peerless
I'm sorry, I haven't a clue, which is very dangerous when driving. Lots of shows get shout-outs, The Mighty Boosh, Eddie Izzard, The Young Ones and more. Also, I learned the plural for foreskin, which is handy. Overall, coming back to the Python thing, I think Guy nails it when he remarked that however good or variable the sketch shows after they came out, the world of English comedy would never be the same. Though Les Dawson will always live in my heart, Guy, just next to the rhubarb.
Thank you very much, David. That was very enjoyable.
Thank you, Luke.
Bonsoir.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.